Ryan O'Flaherty, the quarterback, wearing number 13. He's gone most of the way in this game. Takes a shotgun snap. He's going to throw to the end zone. He's got a man. He's got a touchdown. Kyle Morkett. And the Rams aren't done yet, folks.
Growing the Game with Ballsy is a podcast dedicated to growing the game of football in Saskatchewan. Each week, Michael Ball will talk with Ryder guests, but he'll also highlight amateur athletes, coaches, and builders in this province growing the game we love. Now, here's Ballsy.
And thanks once again for tuning in to Growing the Game with Ballsy. I really appreciate it. And I really appreciate the fine sponsors that support this podcast, like Pizza Huts in Saskatchewan, like Mark Greshner Photography, like Face First Medical Aesthetics, just above Gabo's on Dudney Avenue here in downtown Regina, by Boys Next Door Window Cleaning, by Paul Waldo over at Royal LePage here in Regina, by Paul Riviere over there at Riviere Ag Seeds in Radville, and by Sasalex Football out there at the Yar Center in Moose Jaw. They've got that great 7-on-7 league going on right now. Around here at Growing the Game with Ballsy, we like to have a little fun with a thing we call Quarantunes.
Woo! You ever seem to have one of those years where it seems like nothing's going right? From the pandemic all the way down to your job. Well, you know, dealing with all that stuff ain't easy. But this dad's got a way to cope with it. Let me tell you about it.
Time now for Where Are They Now, brought to you by our friends over at Double Z Ag Sales in Weyburn for grain hauling, grain marketing, and crop insurance. Give Corey a call out there, Double Z Ag Sales in Weyburn. Talking with one of the great kickers in Rough Rider history, in CFL history, that would be Paul McCallum. Now, Paul, tell us what you're doing now. In fact, what you're doing now ties in, I guess, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on how you want to look at it, with what we're going through in the world with COVID. Tell us, Paul.
Yeah, hey, thanks for having me, Ballsy. I'm working with a health and safety company here in Vancouver, and I've been put in charge to run the disinfectant electrostatic division. So what we're doing is we're going around and we're helping businesses, hotels, gymnasiums, arenas disinfect for COVID. Our product, it's a biodegradable, non-corrosive, there's no ammonias, there's no bleaches, there's really no hazards, health hazards to it, but you can put it in a kitchen. Hmm. It's pretty diverse and very eco-friendly.
Awesome, man, and you're probably looking to expand that business out east here towards Saskatchewan and the prairies, I'm assuming.
I am, actually. I hooked up with a friend of mine there to try and put me in contact with some of the larger janitorial companies and see if I could help them get going with some of the products that we have out here. And we're coming across Canada. We're in Calgary already, and we've got a division in Toronto as well.
Awesome, man. Okay, so that ties into my first question here for you as it relates to football. The coaches are getting fined in the NFL for not wearing masks. Now, I believe safety is important. We just touched on it here with your business, but coaches wearing masks, I mean, if you're on the field of play, are you not already negative? Haven't you passed extensive screening? Like, if the players aren't wearing masks, do the coaches really need to wear masks?
You know, I'll be honest with you. I don't know their protocol, their safety protocol. But, I mean, if they're all going to be isolated together and there's no outside, contaminants or people coming into their space, I don't see the point. I mean, that's just me. If everyone's around each other, no one's going out with other people that haven't already been screened.
Yeah,
I'm not sure, because I mean the masks are to protect other people, so it's not to, you know, if the coaches are not wearing a mask, they're saying that they could possibly, you know, infect the players. That's the purpose of the masks. So I'm really not sure if everyone's all together, the players, the coaches, and they're in hotels and they're going to practice and they're going to the games. I'm not sure. Like I said, don't know their protocol, but Yeah, it is kind of interesting.
It's a head scratcher. Hey, last night, John Gruden throws out his kicker, Carlson, to kick a long one to end the game. What kind of pressure is that like to go out and kick that long field goal to win the game? Because if he misses that one, Drew Brees is set up with a short field.
You know, it's part of the job. I mean, I've always enjoyed going out. It didn't matter if it was a long or a short one. That's what you're paid to do, and that's why you are in the position you're in. You want to have the opportunity to help your team. You know, one of the great coaches told me a long time ago, Don Matthews, you know, one player is not going to win or lose the game. And so if the kicker made that kick, he never won the game. The team did, because the team got him in a position. And, you know, unfortunately, some people might not like to hear me say this, but when the kicker misses the kick, the kicker didn't lose the game either, because, you know, there's so many other aspects to a game that can help win or lose. I mean, was there a fumble? Was there a dropped pass earlier on in the game? You know, it's just one of those things. But, you know, you got to go out and do your job. And that was one of the things that I loved to do, was come out at the end of the game.
Have you ever let that one kick go? Have you been able to look through the windshield and not the rearview mirror? Or is that something you never forget?
Well, you have to let it go. I mean, let's face it. I mean, I missed a pretty important kick a long time ago. And, you know, in 04. And if I had have let that, you know, sort of keep coming and creeping in the back of my mind, I don't think I would be able to play for as long after that as I did.
Yeah, no, for sure. So we talk kickers here. Harrison Butker hits three 50-yard-plus field goals in over a minute. He hits a 53-yarder. There's a 5-yard penalty. Goes back to 58. Hits it, but the Chargers call a timeout. Hits it again, a 58-yarder. Does icing a kicker help or hurt the kicker?
It depends on the kicker. I used to love it when they would do that, because it would just give me some more time to sort of, you know, compose yourself and focus and think, you know. I think the old thought behind that was you're going to give him more time to get nervous. So it all depends on the kicker. I used to like it when they would do that, because, you know, you're driving down the field, the clock is ticking, you got to get out there. You don't have time to think. You just get out and you kick it. You know, so that part for me, I would have preferred them to call a timeout.
Yeah, and how about getting in a rhythm? That's like having three of the same putts in a row, isn't it? Like, for a kicker, I know it's 50-plus yards, it's not a gimme putt, but, I mean, you get in a rhythm, don't you?
Yeah, you do. I mean, it's one of those things. You get out there, and if you're hitting the ball well, you hit the first one, do it again, hit the next one. Yeah, I've already done this twice, and just do it again a third time. So, yeah, It is a mindset, as everyone knows. The kicking game is very mental. I think some people think that you know, calling a timeout, icing the kicker works. And sometimes they think, well, how are you going to do this three times in a row? But, you know, that's what you do. You've got to go out there and just be consistent.
What do you remember about the 62-yarder you hit? And did you know it was good when it left your foot?
You know, it was kind of, that to me was a sort of a buildup to things, because I think it was either a week or a week before that where we had a game at home, and it would have been even a longer kick than that. But I mean, it was windy. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted Danny to let me kick the ball, and he said no. And, you know, after the game, he said he didn't know how far I could kick it. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was, you know, oh, great, he's got the confidence, he knows I can hit this. And, you know, yeah, I did hit it really well, and I knew once it left my foot it was going to be good, because, you know, I worked on some of the longer field goals earlier in that week, so the team could sort of gauge how strong my leg was. It was pretty memorable.
What did you think of that watermelon kick by the Cowboys the other day?
I'll be honest with you, I didn't see it. Didn't see it.
Really? Okay. So he kicks it like a spinner. It's like they call it the watermelon kick. He just kicks it off the ground, and it just kind of spins like a UFO. I guess a better question for you is, how much input as a kicker do you have on the special team strategy, like an onside kick or different things?
Again, that would vary. I mean, I can't speak for the other kickers and whatnot that I played with during my career, but I was very in touch with the special teams and all my special teams coaches, and I'd watch film, and I'd ask to do things, and sometimes if I would, you know, ask, they would say draw it up, and so I'd draw it up, and I would say most of the times there was a few plays that they would try, we'd actually work on and practice, And I would say maybe twice, three times in my career, they let me actually run it. Because, I mean, obviously you can prepare and put a play in there, but you've got to get the right field position, the right time, the right scenario, and things like that. But
did most of the time does it work, Paul, when you did try it? Because I find special teams very robotic. They do it a certain way and a certain way only. And that's why I think that spinning watermelon kick, as they like to say, worked against the Falcons, because the guys didn't know what to do. They looked like third basemen waiting for the ball to go foul. They didn't attack the ball because it was coming in a weird way. Did most of your strategies work?
Yeah, I would say so. There was a kickoff that I put together where, you come out of the start of the half and you would have your regular kickoff team, but the other team would have their regular kickoff team, but you'd line up on an onside position. Mm-hmm. And they didn't know how to line up. They didn't know where we were going to go with the ball, but we had three different options on what we're going to do with it. And, that's something different. So when you throw something different that the other team has been not prepared for the whole week, then, the watermelon kick, and assuming it puts a glitch in things, I think it's a copycat league. You put the ball in the right, you put the ball in the right hash. You want to kick the ball deep outside the numbers, close to the sideline as possible to pin them. Well, as soon as you line up, they know where you're kicking the ball. They know where your guys are coming from and everything else. So, if you put the ball on the right hash and instead of kicking it there every single time, if you kick it somewhere else, do something different, then you're actually putting them in a difficult situation. So, once in a while, it's good to throw a little hook in there and put the other team off balance.
Paul, when you were growing up, who did you idolize in football? Like, what turned you on to the game of football? I know you had the soccer background, but what turned you on to the game of Canadian football?
To be quite honest with you, it wasn't one particular person. I had the BC Lions living up the street from me. That was kind of a cool thing. Mm-hmm. And, I like watching the big plays, the fast game. So it really wasn't one in particular player. I remember Joe Pow, Merv Fernandez, mm-hmm. I think it was John Pancratz, and of course Louis. So yeah, it was just the whole thing of going and watching a game and learning the game, actually. So it was sort of a gradual process for myself.
You're about the same age as me, and I remember all those names you mentioned, and that was back in the day when BC Place was just built and we only got one NFL game a week on our TV, and we didn't have the internet or anything like that, so we were really into the CFL game. 50, 60,000 fans going to watch the West Final between Winnipeg and BC. How do we get the kids turned on to the Canadian game again, Paul? And maybe it'll never be to that extent, but how do we make it, in particular in your backyard, how do we make it big in BC again?
Yeah, well, to begin with, you can have all the high schools playing Canadian football. It's been a bit of a pet peeve of mine. When kids are going to school, if they're hockey players, they're looking up to the NHL players. If they're football players and they're playing in BC anyway, they're playing 11-man football. And if they're playing a tight end, which, we really don't have, per se, the same style of a tight end up in Canada, then they're not going to relate to a Canadian game, a player, that is. So I think to start with, you need to have the kids playing the Canadian game so that when they're watching the game on TV, they're watching the Canadian game and they're not watching the NFL. I mean, it starts at the grassroots. I think from there, because the players are so accessible, when a player that they've watched on TV shows up to their school, those types of things, they mean a lot to a little child that's growing up and wants to play sports.
Yeah, I mean, in BC, you've got a lot more to compete with attention-wise. You played in Saskatchewan and were, pretty big name here. You went out to the schools. You did a lot of things. You saw the passion here. Is it possible to translate the passion here from the grassroots all the way up? Because kids want to be Rough Riders. They want to be at Mosaic Stadium or the old Taylor Field where you played. Can we transfer that in BC? Do you think that's possible? Because I always hear it'll never work in BC. It's never going to work there.
Well, it's the negative thought process. I mean, you are up against a huge marketing machine in the NFL, but that's just what it is. I mean, it, to be honest, it's quite sad. If you walk through the Vancouver airport, you see more Seahawks stuff than you do BC Lions stuff. I just don't think that the marketing has been what it needs to be. The TV commercials, I've seen TV commercials for the CFL, and they've got actors jumping to catch a ball, or
yeah.
And the guy doesn't even fit in his pants. It's sad, really.
Yeah.
I mean, the way that they market the league as a whole, I don't think is very good. It is what it is.
I talked to John Ryan about this, and he agreed there aren't, as we talk about kickers, there aren't a lot of great kicking camps here. Like, we always talk about special teams is a third of the game, but I find special teams isn't really a third of the game. It's lost. Like, you probably, at least probably when you play, maybe it's changed a bit. You don't coach it. You know, you don't spend as much time on it in practice. You don't, you kind of slough it off. The coaches slough it off in practice. I even find it at the grassroots level. Like, I don't find a lot of good kicking camps in Canada. Have you ever thought about doing that? Have you done that? Maybe I missed out on that.
I've thought about it, but it's actually quite difficult, because when you're kicking, if you think about it, if I've got 10 kids, and I've got 20 balls, well, each kid kicks two balls, then they got to go get the ball mm-hmm. and bring it back for the other two kids. And, you know, if I've got five kids, it's just one of those things where the patience level of mm-hmm. learning how to kick in a group setting, it's hard. And so, for example, myself having five kids, you know, how many, if all of them are kicking at the same time, I'm really not doing them any justice. So it's kind of a very individual thing. So as far as having a camp goes, you'd have to have almost one coach for two kickers and, 100 footballs, and yeah. maybe their little brothers and sisters grabbing the balls to bring them back.
Yeah.
So there's a challenge there. But that being said, you know, I think what would be more helpful is going out and having the, like somebody like myself, which I have done, is going out and coaching the coaches, mm-hmm. because there isn't a lot of, kid or Pee Wee football coaches that have the knowledge, because they're, it's offense or defense.
That's
and,
right.
Sometimes I've gone out and watched high school games when I was in Regina even. And, I remember watching, it was an onside kick, and I was like, they're just little things that the details make the difference when it comes to all aspects of football, but those details are always spent on offense and defense.
Riffle had Riffle High School here. My son went last year, he graduated, but they had a kicker grade 9 that was bombing 40-yard field goals. What kind of advice would you have for a young guy that is interested in kicking, but like you said, there's not a lot of tutelage, there's not a lot of direction in that aspect? It's kind of go over there and kick, kid, and we'll bring you on when we have to. What kind of advice would you have for a young kid like that trying to become the next Paul McCallum, John Ryan, Brett Lowther, that type of guy?
Try and be part of the team. When I played junior football, I was like a third string receiver.
Yeah.
They never wanted to put me out there in case I got hurt. But at the same time, with my soccer background, I was fast. I could run. I could catch. And so I'd go and have fun. And you get to sort of, you don't have to go spend all that time, just by yourself in the corner. Get out there and do some of the drills with the receivers, the DBs, or just to be involved, because you can't kick all day. So, when it comes to that, you need to actually, be part of the team.
Hey, help me out if I'm right here. When we're talking 11 or 12-man football in BC, wasn't one of the bullshit excuses about the size of the field and where they put the goalposts as to the fact they couldn't play 12-man, they had to play 11-man?
Well, yeah, but I think that's actually a fact.
Really?
I mean, when you think, if you think about it, the NFL, and the fields that they have,
yeah.
They've got the goalposts at the back.
Right.
So, if you're playing the Canadian game and you missed a field goal, well, you can't run out of the end zone because the ball is in the parking lot.
Right. Yeah, I guess so.
Right. So that is a valid point. But that being said, it's still, I think, the communities need to change that and figure a way to get the goalposts where they need to be.
Yeah, we're in Canada. Let's promote the Canadian game. Like you said, Paul, I agree. It starts at the grassroots level. Last thing for you, being a Canadian, do you think one of the recipes to fixing the Canadian Football League is putting more Canadians in the league, not less Canadians in the league?
No, I think we're good where we are. I really do. I mean, you know, unfortunately, I mean, it's just a numbers game. What do we have, 40, 50 million in Canada and 300-something or 200-something million in the States? I can't remember exactly. I mean, I did know the statistics of their population. But you just can't compete. And so when you hear these people saying, well, let's just put the best man on the field. Well, okay. So we're going to have one Claybrook or whatever the Claypool that's going to play. All right. So it doesn't make any sense. We just don't have the population. We don't have all the same money. Let's face it, the money that goes into coaching. And a quick example is I remember growing up as a kid when I was like 10 years old playing soccer. We did the exchange in the United States. We would go down there, Seattle, Washington, wherever, in our soccer, we would kill the Americans. Now the Americans are going to host the World Cup. They put billions of dollars into their programs and everything else. And now they create a complete soccer league, and they're actually, you know, higher than Canada in the world and everything else because they put the money and the time and the marketing and the coaches. They bring coaches in from the Europe to coach their young kids. It's unfortunately, it's money and it's numbers. So we can't compete with the United States with marketing dollars, with population, with coaching. I mean, it's the same, you know, Western Washington University's budget's probably bigger than the whole CFL. So how are you going to compete? So we have to protect and keep our Canadians in the game. But at the same time, I mean, you know, the ratio that we have right now, it's fine. But we also, we have to protect our player positions. It's just, if we don't do that, they're, you know, we're going to turn into a farm league for the NFL.
And we know how that works with it. Dian, you played in an XFL that didn't make it. Hey, by the way, last one. Do you think Rock's going to make that thing work?
You know what? He's got more football sense than Vince McMahon, so I don't know. it'll be interesting. I mean, I think if it's done right, it could be, but don't try and compete with the NFL. It's not going to happen.
Hey, I hope to see you out here. If you're helping in the battle against COVID, maybe we'll cross paths.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like I said, I'm going to reach out to some people I know out there in Regina, and you know, if I can make something happen, I will, and I'll be out there for sure, and I'll let you know.
Take care, buddy.
All right, you too. Take care, Balzi. Bye.
This has been Growing the Game with Balzi. If you have a football story you'd like to share to help us grow the game, email Michael Ball at mball@harvardbroadcasting.com. Balzi can be heard weekdays in Regina on 104.9 The Wolf Morning Show and during Saskatchewan Roughriders and U of R Rams broadcasts on 620 CKRM.